Good afternoon, everyone. It's news time. This is KFSK's Midday Magazine for Thursday, May the 26th. I'm Angela Denning. In the news today, six community organizations are getting financial help from the Petersburg Community Foundation. Also, Petersburg's 35th annual Salmon Derby begins tomorrow morning. We have those details. Sitka residents worry about an aggressive sea lion at the harbor. We will actually hear that story today, even though I mentioned it yesterday. And two Southeast communities receive federal money for renewable energy projects. These stories and more are coming up in the Midday Magazine. Six community organizations are getting a little financial help from the Petersburg Community Foundation. The six nonprofits are sharing $15,000 in grants. Here's more on that. The Petersburg Community Foundation puts money back into the community through annual grants to help maintain the quality of life in the area. Since it began 8 years ago, the foundation has awarded $67,000 in grants. The grants this year fund programs addressing early childhood education, childhood hunger, domestic violence, arts, and journalism. The six organizations sharing the money are the Petersburg Children's Center, Petersburg Arts Council, Petersburg Corps of the Salvation Army, the Mitkoff Island Dance Troupe, WAVE, and KFSK.
This year was easy.
That's David Wallen, chairman of the foundation's board.
It was a fun year because we really didn't have to deliberate. Going into it, we knew that we had somewhere $14,000 or $15,000 to pass out, and lo and behold, our grants totaled $15,000.
The Petersburg Children's Center will use $3,400 to complete safety upgrades for a classroom expansion project. The center has had a long wait list in recent years, and the expansion will allow an additional 20 children to enroll. Petersburg Arts Council is receiving $3,000 to replace the movie screen in the Wright Auditorium. The Salvation Army in Petersburg will use $3,000 to help fund weekend food assistance for students who are fed by the school during the week. WAVE, or Working Against Violence for Everyone, was granted $900 to continue its operation of the 24-hour crisis hotline. KFSK will use $3,200 to establish a community archive and digital public record. And the Mitkoff Island Dance Troupe is getting $1,500 for needs-based scholarships. The Petersburg Community Foundation is now looking forward to the next grant cycle. Like last year, the organization is trying to get another match from the Rasmussen Foundation. Wallen says it requires $5,000 from new members.
And even at our donor party, which we just had Saturday, there were a couple of new members that showed up and helped out.
Everyone counts, right?
Everyone counts. Everyone does count. Yeah.
The foundation has about 125 businesses and individuals as donors. Last year, they donated about $39,500. In Petersburg, I'm Angela Denning. It's Derby time. The Petersburg Chamber of Commerce's 35th annual Salmon Derby opens bright and early tomorrow morning. Hundreds of anglers will head out on the water for the four-day event. Participants can win cash prizes for the three largest salmon and over 100 other gift certificates, clothing, food, and equipment items that have been donated by local businesses. Ron Lesh is chair of the Chamber's Salmon Derby Committee. He says volunteers fished all morning Wednesday before catching and tagging two fish at the mouth of the Wrangell Narrows.
So we have a $5,000 tag fish and a $10,000 tag fish sponsored by the Chamber of Commerce and Alaska Marine Lines for the $10,000, and Hammer and Weekend sponsors the $5,000 tag fish. So both those fish have been secured.
Those are the prizes for anyone catching those two tagged fish again during the Derby, something that's only happened once before. Local resident Tammy Strickland caught the $5,000 tagged fish 16 years ago. The cash prizes are substantial for lucky anglers catching the largest salmon. First prize gets $7,000, Second place gets $3,500, and third place, $2,500. There are also a number of hidden weight and special prizes awarded at a prize ceremony next Thursday. Other successful anglers can choose from sightseeing tours, an outboard engine, chainsaw, fishing pole, crushed rock, a day of charter fishing, GoPro camera, and many other great prizes from local businesses.
It looks like we got close to the same number of prizes, but a lot of them people up the value of their prizes. So I think people will be pleased with the choices they have this year.
Salmon Derby tickets are on sale at the Tides Inn, Scandia House, and the two hardware stores, Hammer and Weekon and Trading Union. People who buy a ticket by 6 p.m. tonight will get their name in for a $250 prize drawing. Participants have to remember to get their tickets validated before going out to fish. There will be ticket validating at Banana Point Boat Ramp from 7 to 8 a.m. on Friday and at the boat harbors. Other than that, it's at the weigh-in station at the Harbor Master's Office or the Scandia House. Last year, Scott Stafford won with a 50.9-pound king salmon, the first winner to break 50 pounds since Dwayne Olson's 59.8-pounder back in 2009. KFSK will be providing updates on the leaderboard throughout the weekend. Fishing ends at 5 p.m. Monday, May the 30th. A 2,500-pound terrorist has been surprising sport and commercial fishermen outside of Sitka's harbors. There's one thing he's after, fish, and the season is just ramping up. This federally protected mammal is causing more trouble than his weight for the city of Sitka. KCAW's Brielle Schaefer reports.
A stellar sea lion has been frequenting the Sealing Cove Fish Cleaning Station for more than a month now. When anglers cruise into the floating dock to fillet their catch, the animal beelines toward them for what he hopes is an easy meal. Police Lieutenant Lance Ewers had his own run-in with the sea lion after a day out on the water with his kids. He says he saw his friend cleaning fish by the runway on his way back into Sealing Cove and asked what was up. The sea lion had chased Ewers' friend away from the cleaning station. So, like any good detective, Ewers had to find out what was going on. He drove over to the dock and left his kids on the boat.
All of a sudden, the sea lion jumps up out of the water onto the fish cleaning station, like on the dock. And you would be surprised how agile they are, even out of water. It doesn't hop around or like, you know, you see on National Geographic the walruses. Don't be fooled by the sea lion. They get around just fine.
The sea lion didn't see any fish, so it hopped back into the water, but not before sizing him up.
But it did not fear me. There was no fear in it whatsoever. It knew, you know, it was a sea lion and I was a human and I was in its neck of the woods.
And NOAA law enforcement says that is the problem. The animal is accustomed to humans and has come to associate the cleaning station with food. Al Duncan is the assistant special agent in charge with NOAA Fisheries Office of Law Enforcement in Sitka.
It's really a learned behavior on the sea lion's part in particular because people, some of the reports that we've received is that people are actually taking fish carcasses and feeding the sea lions.
Duncan says NOAA talked to the city about possibly moving the fish cleaning station until the sea lion disassociates it with food. But that could cause further problems. Fish waste near the runway attracts birds, which causes safety hazards for airplanes. And cleaning fish inside the harbors is prohibited.
We posted some signs, do not feed. We posted some additional signs, making the public aware that there is an aggressive sea lion that seems to be running about this location. So that they're aware of it and could use good extreme caution when utilizing this facility.
And really, that's the best they can do. The sea lion is federally protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. That means the city and state have to stay hands off. Wildlife trooper Tim Hall said if a bear was showing the same aggressive behavior, the state would consider destroying it. Stan Eliason, the city's harbor master, says he can't even haze the sea lion away from the station without proper permits.
Yeah, it seems like they've got more protection than we do, so, but it's just how it goes.
He says he's working with NOAA's Protected Resources Division out of Juneau to figure out the best course of action with the sea lion.
You know, they've recommended putting, like, scarecrows out there, and I don't think that's going to work. You know, it's just, he's too comfortable with humans.
Sitka and Southeast have had problems with the massive marine mammals before. In 2014, a sea lion lunged out of the water and bit a commercial fisherman on his backside. A similar thing has happened in Petersburg, too. Eliasson says the sea lion's behavior is the worst he's ever seen. And the animal has now been reported in each of the city's five harbors. He's worried about the safety of harbor users, especially children. In one recent instance, this sea lion jumped aboard a man's boat, startling him to the point he fell over and caught his hand in a hook. There is one option to get rid of the sea lion without federal intervention: subsistence harvest. Alaska natives living on the coast are allowed to hunt the animals. Here's Eliasson.
No, you know, it'd be a win-win situation for myself, again, so I don't have to worry about, you know, the sea lion charging adults and as well as children and pets.
But until if and when that happens, Eliasson says,
don't feed the darn thing.
Reporting in Sitka, I'm Brielle Schaefer.
It is illegal to feed or attempt to feed sea lions in the wild. NOAA Fisheries law enforcement will issue citations to those violating the law. Two Alaska communities are receiving a federal grant to jumpstart renewable energy projects. Haines and the village of Heidelberg were selected from 77 applicants nationwide. Elizabeth Jenkins has more from Juneau.
Over the past 10 years, about 36 biomass systems have been installed in Alaska. The term sounds pretty technical, but it's used to describe a prehistoric way to stay warm, a wood-burning fire.
You know, we're not talking about some smoky old wood stove here. We're talking about high-tech equipment.
That's Dan Parent, a program manager at the U.S. Forest Service. He says the wood innovation grants were awarded to projects that maximize energy efficiency. Typically, the wood comes from second growth or byproducts. It even helps mitigate the threat of wildfire. In the village of Heidelberg, the grant is funding the heat system for the school, which also includes a greenhouse. Cordwood will keep the buildings warm, displacing over 2,400 gallons of heating fuel a year. The total cost is $900,000, with the bulk of the funding coming from the Alaska Energy Authority. In the past decade, Parent says he's seen more cities consider biomass as a viable option.
You know, several years ago, oil prices were through the roof. And that's when a lot of these projects got started and got funded.
Although the price of oil has dropped, that interest has remained.
We are tied on this very fragile supply line to Seattle for our food and our fuel.
Darcy Kolbeck is a biomass consultant to the Haines Borough. A $1.5 million biomass system is in the works that could heat the borough's schools, some public facilities, and a swimming pool with wood chips. Kolbeck says the wood chips could come from the Haines State Forest and stimulate the local economy. On top of that, he thinks the savings could come back to help the borough in a big way.
Budget crisis happens and we lose our art teacher. Can we keep that art teacher because we saved enough money on fuel? That would be awesome.
In 2010, the village of Toke fired up its biomass boiler, and 3 years later, they were saving enough money to add a music teacher and a school counselor. Heidelberg and Haines biomass systems are expected to be completed next year. In Juneau, I'm Elizabeth Jenkins.
The Ketchikan City Council decided last week to move forward with a 5% additional sales tax for marijuana retail sales within the city limits. During public comment, Eric Reimer, who is in the process of getting permits for a retail marijuana store on Stedman Street in Ketchikan, suggested a graduated tax that starts at a lower level initially and builds annually. Reimer added that the proceeds of such a tax should go toward public education. He talked about extracurricular activities that often face cuts when the school district is looking at tight budgets.
I mean, we have a duty to our young people to allow them to have these opportunities to travel around the state, to have extracurricular activities. And I think that money that cannabis tourism brings in would be perfect to really dedicate to that use.
Also during public comment, Spencer Strasburg, who has been a vocal supporter of marijuana businesses in the city, expressed reservations about the location of Reimer's planned store. He says the core tourism area is too sensitive for pot shops.
I can see the tour bus now riding by and saying, you can get your weed right over there, and right across the creek is the whorehouse right there. And I can start to see the conservative people start going, oh, I know what part of town that is. And the kids and honey, we're going to go somewhere else. And so that would be my big concern.
The proposed store on Stedman Street in Ketchikan is close to historic Creek Street, a boardwalk street that was Ketchikan's infamous red light district for many years. It's now a popular destination for tourists, with many of the former brothels now offering trinkets, t-shirts, and art. During the council's last meeting, members voted to not oppose the proposed marijuana retail store, which also would provide a space for people to consume marijuana on site. During Ketchikan's council discussion of the pot tax, there was general agreement on a 5% tax not graduated, with the proceeds going into the general fund. The council directed city management to come back with an ordinance to that effect for their next regular meeting. And finally, snow in the northernmost town in the nation is melting earlier than ever before on record. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's observatory in Barrow reported a snow melt starting on May 13th. That's 10 days earlier than the previous record set in 2002. NOAA has been recording snowmelt from its Barrow Observatory for over 70 years. The record melt follows a winter of record-setting temperatures. Alaska was more than 11 degrees warmer than normal this winter, and this winter didn't just see an early melt on land. According to the National Snow and Ice Data Center, 2016 also saw the lowest winter sea ice extent in satellite history. That's it for KFSK Midday News. I'm Angela Denning. Thanks for listening.